is the veil between this world and the next getting thinner? I'm Chris Sloan, inviting you to join in and listen to a new podcast that deals with the paranormal, Parapod, with new guests every week, from paranormal investigators to the people they help. Hear actual EVP. The people that capture.
We go into a case to disprove a haunting.
Three flashlights, actually four counting the lantern, were actually honed in on this thing, and it was swallowing the light up.
Parapod. Log on to myspace.com/ Chris Sloan Radio. That's myspace.com/ CHRISSLONE Radio. The only difference between the believer and the skeptic is time. And your time is now.
Hi, this is Luke.
And this is Tobin from Quest Research.
Hey, Tobin, what do you get when four guys with absolutely no video experience whatsoever decide to produce their own online paranormal TV show?
I don't know. What? Oh, wait. I do know. Ghost Diaries, right?
That's right.
You can check us out and get involved at www.questresearch.net. And the good thing about being new is that we will only get better.
Victory! X Radio, and you.
This is Johnny. Johnny is going to use his computer to contact the spirit. His sister Jenny is very curious and watches. Johnny just typed in www.para-x.com and is now communicating with the dead. You go, Johnny. Jenny is excited because now she can listen to shows like Night Watch with Todd Sheets, Caps Paranormal Radio with David and Tom, Paranormal Awareness with Bill Metz, Ghostology with Brian and Anna Marie, Leinster Paranormal Radio Show with Danny and Cormac, and the Ghost Divas Live. One day, the world will be a better place when we can all be like Johnny and Jenny and tune into Para X Radio at www.para-x.com. All paranormal, all the time.
This is Ghostly Time.
What was that?
We have a demonic dog.
Archie Bunker.
Well, no, I'm just seeing the emails that are going to be coming in. We had this bit of a discourse the last hour, you know, just to kind of get some things out in the air.
I can't wait.
On the open. I'm just.
I don't read my emails, so I have no clue what's going to happen.
You got the right idea, because I read mine way too much, and I can just see it coming now. Like, oh my God, you guys just do nothing but hang on people all the time. And I'm like, well, you know, whatever.
Not true.
It's not true, man. We're going to prove that to you right now. Because who do we have on? Who's here?
Well, you didn't write me a whole thing, but
why do we need to? Does she need introduction?
No, she does not. We've had Tamara Thorne on for, a huge number of times now. And, of course, Tamara, you are a great friend of the show. Obviously, you are not only a widely published author and... wow, but you also go out and about.
And, girl.
Yeah, you're a girl, too. And, girls, I love girls. Hell, dog.
I was going to ask.
Okay, go ahead. I didn't mean to stop.
From now on,
and then I thought,
Doug must have a bio to read.
I know. He's lost.
And then I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not going to say anything more about that because we're going to go into. Yeah. And then I switch train tracks right in the middle there. And of course, you picked up.
This is the reason this is a dual hosted show, so you screw up what you say.
What weren't you going to say anything more about?
I was going to say something about how you go in and you actually you research your stuff to get ideas for your stories. And I thought, well, you know, we could talk about that, but I wanted to jump into, oh, now I don't even remember where I wanted to jump over. But I wasn't going to mention how you go in and do the research. That was the track that I was trying to jump over.
That's okay. It's no secret.
But no, yeah, it's not. But anyway, so now I've completely lost it. And Ghostly Talk would like to welcome Tamara Thorne back to the show.
It's really good to have you back, Tamara. Like Doug said, we've been having you on the show for years now, and it's always fun to kind of get your take on things. And no, the first thing we had on our list of things to discuss tonight was Haunting in Connecticut.
Well,
that movie.
The Haunting in Connecticut, which you saw. What did you think of it? I saw it, too.
Oh, I loved it. I went to the premiere. One of the producers and a lot of other people, and everybody was squawking and jumping and trying not to hide their eyes. It was fun.
Okay, and I'm gonna make a comment here about that tension. It had it. It was. I had fun. I actually, you heard me. He's like, Doug, we sat next to each other. You were my date for the night.
Yeah.
And we sat there, and tension, that movie had it. That movie, like, you know, it was always like, you know, and I always just, I was laughing, you know. I was like, ha, 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 scared the crap out of me.
Well, that's because, I don't know, was it marketed toward teenagers on dates? Because
apparently, every girl behind,
because we didn't go did it have like an early opening Friday night, or did it open on Saturday? I don't remember.
It was open Friday.
So what it was is we went at 8 p.m. on Saturday. So we thought, okay, well, the early goers or the people who had to see it right away, they would be done on Friday.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, we wanted the first show after dark. And it was just getting dark at 8 p.m. when we went to see it. So it was perfect. You know, we wanted the spooky atmosphere, knowing it was dark outside. And unfortunately, all the teenagers with dates were also there. Yeah. And the girls screamed every time something walked by a window. It could have been the milkman walking by a window.
It could have been an ant.
It could have been. Because they scream, and they were, eee! And it was so funny. I mean, so we were kind of laughing at the very scenes that everybody's jumping at because of the reactions of the girls in the audience. So we had an interesting experience, but it was
the girls.
It was very, very well put together. It was a good show. I liked it.
Tamara, you went and saw it too, obviously.
Well, yeah. it was fantastic. It was marketed with a PG-13, so there you have, you know, teenagers and all, they can get in. And what was really neat is it isn't very gory. It's not gratuitous. There's some squirmy things in there, but it's all about what you don't see. And that always works better, because that's your imagination at work, and that's scarier than what anybody tells you you're going to see.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it was a ghost story. It had a modern look to it, but it was an old-fashioned ghost story, and it just really... It also had a plot, not real similar to the real story, but not dissimilar either. Blah blah blah.
Well, that's one of the things that you mentioned here, Tamara, was that, you know, you're really upset because people, you know, and let's be frank, every single film that comes out now, they're all based on a true story. I'm sure the new Batman movie was based on a true story somehow or something like that. But you know. That's how they sell films now, I think. That's like the number one way they sell films. But I do see this, you know, just because it's based on a true story does not mean that every single nuance of the film has to be true. I agree with that. And it sounds, it sounds like you have an issue with that, too.
Yeah, people have always asked me, what's true in my books and my novels. And I said, there's little things. And I never, I've gone for Jack the Ripper, and there were a whole lot of truths in that. But it's still fiction, and just the very medium, film, it's fictionalized. It's a story to tell, and saying based on reality, I think that appeals to us. We want to know that the ghost story you're hearing is based, it's the urban legend, a friend of a friend, this happened to. That makes it better. Mm-hmm. Well, my books, I use a lot of those things that have happened to friends or to me, but I change them completely. And so you could say that's based in reality, just like Haunting in Connecticut. It's a little more based, but based doesn't mean it's true.
Well, no, and that's fine, but one of the things that really grinded, just upset me, was the very end of the film. When they said, they had the closing notes that said, you know, the house burned down and blah, blah, blah. And then the kid who had terminal cancer... mysteriously, miraculously recovered from that. Now,
he did. Yeah.
This is a true thing.
That's true.
It's been a long time since we talked to Carmen. Okay. So, but he miraculously recovered from terminal cancer.
You know, as far as I know, that's true. I've always heard it's true. I didn't ask the guy who made the movie to be sure. Are you telling me something I don't know?
What's that? I'm sorry.
He did live through it. I know you talked to the...
Well, no, that was the only thing that kind of, like... It was, even whether it's true or not, that's fine. But it was one of those things at the end of the film, like, okay, this kid has been, like, puking through the whole movie from all the radiation he's been getting. And I don't know anybody that's survived that. You know, it's something I think we can ask Carmen about that down the road or something. But it's just something I noticed that was like, ah, you know.
As far as I know, he lived and recovered. I mean... I don't remember what kind of cancer it was. Blood cancers are often curable today that didn't used to be. I'm including the 80s.
But, okay, so, all right, the film was cool. Doug, I know you enjoyed it. Bonnie? Okay, she's got a quiet.
Bonnie didn't like it.
Why didn't you like it, Bonnie?
I just didn't like
it. Okay, then, I'll just pull your mic out then. If you don't want to talk about it, that's fine.
It was too much of the rah, jump out and scare you, to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
the kind of thing that works for me, yeah.
See, a lot of the effects, or a lot of the scary parts or whatever, were more the startles. You know, the startle.
And they were all expected.
Well, yeah.
I was amazed how many did happen as compared to most things where they tease you and tease you, and then they pull back right before you're about to... Oh, wait, that's the wrong subject. you know what I mean. This one delivered multiples.
I think you would make a great director.
Thank you.
I'm starring your film.
Yes. Woo! I don't have anything to follow that up with. No. But there, this has happened, though, where people take these ghost stories, and some are based on a true story, like this one was, and some are, you know, completely fictionalized, but they tell a little story. And some people can pull it off better than others, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
For example, if you take this versus White Noise, which I did not like at all, right?
I had problems with that. I've always had problems with a guy that... started it.
I think even that was just a poorly written movie and a poorly written script. It followed nothing that I know about. Like the bad guy, for example, we got to see him for like 30 seconds outside of an elevator on a job site, and somehow we're supposed to dislike him or have an, you know, some kind of affinity toward him, and then at the very end he's kidnapping the wife and blah blah blah. No, it was you have to develop your characters, and this character, who the bad guy, was just not developed at all. I mean, I don't understand how 30 seconds outside an elevator looking goofy is character development. And I think they broke really, really bad rules of you know, how an audience needs to have a story laid out for them in order to enjoy the story. Mm-hmm. So White Noise was done, I believe, completely unsuccessfully. Yet the one guy... The guy, I think
the
he ended
EVP
up dying.
Guy?
The EVP guy, I know him. I mean, I don't know him, the person, or him, the actor, but I know people like him who have all this wonderful equipment, and they go after it all the time. So, you know, so I could identify with him, not that I identify with him personally, but I identify that I know, you know, people, they develop that character really well, and that character was not all that important in the entire story. It was an ancillary character to the story. So I was flabbergasted at how that movie was put together. This movie, though, Haunting in Connecticut, it told the kernels of truth of the story. It did Hollywoodize a lot of things to make a more coherent, you know, because obviously when things are happening in real life, they're going to make no sense. They're not going to have a beginning or an ending. Sometimes they're going to be just totally weird and offbeat at all hours of the day.
Entertainment, okay? And Tamara had that too.
They had to make a story out of it, and I think they successfully took that story and made an interesting story out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think so too. Yeah, I liked it a lot better than the version that was on TV's A Haunting, which was A Haunting in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Way too religious.
No, and it comes down to this thing, like I said, just entertainment too. I think you mentioned Tamara, that in our notes here you know, some people are taking this as gospel just because it's based on a true story. It has to be exactly true to the whole thing. Well, if it was completely true, it'd be a 4-day-long film, probably. First of all,
and it'd be like a real ghost investigation. People would be falling asleep for a couple of hours.
Well, nothing happened between noon and 6.
You know, but yeah, there is this thing called entertainment, and I think that's what we're trying to tell people here too. That okay? Look, you know, we spent the last hour, you know, yelling about reality TV shows and Satan's website and all that stuff too. And I think it just comes down to that there is this thing. I think people and we said it here before, there is this gray area now, it seems like, that's between reality and entertainment. And we've seen the networks have done this. They are the ones responsible for making this gray area where, you know, some people don't even know what the difference is between reality and what entertainment is.
Right.
And
it's
really scary. And I think, you know, Christ, I mean, even Jason and Grant, I mean, I'm sorry, we weren't going to mention them again, but they told us this. They told us.
They didn't mention them to me. I didn't know that.
Okay, but they told us this, so like, it's entertainment. This is entertainment we're doing here. It's entertainment. Yeah, it's on our passion. It's on what we love. But it's entertainment, you know, and some people...
Yeah, and that's all anyone in that position can say. No one thinks about the contracts and the production companies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd love to tell you I'm on Ghost Adventures next season and where, but I can't tell you the where yet.
Mm-hmm. That's something,
because there's contracts. There's things you have to live up to.
Yeah.
But no, I think that's the issue that people are having right now. And I think that's where you get a lot of this debating going on, especially in the paranormal community, where people are going back and forth. Well, that's what happened on this show. Look, if you're going to use any TV show as an argument with me, you better end it right now. Okay, because that's no basis for any argument. I've tried that before, too, and I got shredded for it also years ago. And it just look, it don't work. You know, real research is where you're, you know, let's discuss real things. You know?
Yeah.
I'm tired of bitching.
Really?
The thing is I think it could be done well. I think you could do things like...
No, it couldn't be to attract a viewing audience.
Oh, that's not true. Look at Mythbusters. For example.
What about?
Do you remember when the Mentos thing? This has nothing to do with what we were talking about with Tamara either. But the Mentos, you take a Mentos or whatever.
Yeah,
you
put it in a
Diet Coke or Coke or something, and then it goes... Well, you know, you saw it on the YouTube sites, and you read about it on I'll Dig and all that stuff, and it's like, ha-ha, that's really neat. And some people might have even tried it. Well, the Mythbusters went, and they actually did it, and they did it big. I mean, because that's their thing, is they want to take something, and they want to make it, like, magnanimous. Mm. And they do, and they did it big, and it was phenomenal. And they take these things that they hear about, it could be true or not, and they experiment, and they do these things and see what happens. And I think that that's a brilliant show. It's fairly reality-based in that they're just showing you what happened, and sometimes the thing blows up, and sometimes they have to add dynamite.
It's still entertainment, though. It's still entertainment.
It's entertaining
to watch something blow up. It's hilarious.
I think that went to infotainment, too, because it's entertaining.
Yeah.
They're very good characters.
Yeah, they're doing science. Mr. Science, they're building
right,
all
very,
stuff.
Yeah, very.
Well, my point is, there's just this gray area, and that's Tamara. That's where where your argument's coming from too. Is that some people take all this stuff as gospel when it's entertainment. Bottom line.
Yeah, and I can understand people who need to take ghost stories as gospel who do, but I'm not on TV, please.
No. So
how do you discern? Like how? Well, okay. As somebody, Tamara, who's created stories out of experiences and out of research and out, because that's what you do with your some, because your stories typically have a supernatural bent to them as well as
being
really really hot, but they also have a supernatural bent to them, and so you must like see something, right? Something happens to you, or you're in a place, or something tweaks that spark, right? And then around that spark an idea forms, and then around the idea comes a scene, and around the idea becomes characters start developing, and somehow it transforms into a book that literally millions of people just absolutely, like, some of them pick it up and they read it cover to cover in the first sitting and don't go to work that day, you know, like me. And, How does it happen? Like, how do you choose how to make reality? I mean, because obviously the stories seem kind of real, it could happen, you know. But how do you divide between actual reality and the reality in a story? And then let's try and project that onto the making of a film and see how that correspondence, if there is a correspondence. Why not?
I wish your caller number worked. I know someone who could answer that last part.
I know.
Yeah. Lots of times it's a character that comes first. Other times it's like I've messed around with fake psychics, and then that'll inspire a scene. Or I've seen probably more than half a dozen just jaw-dropping anomalies in the last 30 years, I guess. All of those adult years, unfortunately. But knowing that these things happen and I don't know what they are just inspires across the board. And so it's other things like cold spots and all that I could go, well, maybe there's a vent somewhere even though I don't think there is. That inspires too, because what if? And that's what it always comes down to. What if that cold spot can't be explained by anything we understand? And then it goes from there. And at some point in a book, you have to jump from the real world into crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And that's always hard. You have to get so involved in the book that you believe it. And I call it balonium. You have a balonium, just one, and then you jump into it. And sometimes it turns out it's not so weird, but usually it's, you know, suddenly the headless ghost is walking the lighthouse and, you know, all that sort of thing. But, or you've got a gorgeous succubus, you know, riding you instead of just thinking, am I having a dream?
Oh, baby, that isn't a dream.
No.
Yeah.
Best
guy. It was you.
I told you I was coming out to visit Tamara.
Don't pull that curtain aside. You don't want to know what's behind it. In my case, don't take that bag off its head. But
okay, let's take a quick break.
I think that's a good idea. Because I want to apply that. I want to apply that knowledge, that creative process, that whatever it is that turns that. And I want to see how we think it might, in our discussion in the next half hour, how we think it might develop into a movie or a TV series plot or, you know, whatever. And I think that would be a really good exercise for the next half hour because we've got, obviously, an expert on creativity because your books, Tamara, whoo, good.
We've read about air before.
Yes, we have.
We found the sauciest parts and put them all over the place.
Meanwhile, everybody, of course, coming up next is Paranormal News on the
Bonnie
Vent. Right? And while she's reading, while she's telling you all about what's happening in the paranormal world, I want you all to queue up in your browsers and go to www.tamarathorne.com. That's TamaraThorne.com. And see what's all going on with Tamara's life while you listen to the news.
Ghostly Talk!
Do you want to dive into the bizarre world of the paranormal? Do ghosts, UFOs, or the supernatural amaze you to the point of wanting to learn more? Well then, you need BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. With more than 1,200 hours of on-demand talk radio, syndicated from more than 35 shows, the Black Vault Radio Network is your one-stop shop for the world of the unexplained. Check us out and tune in 24 hours a day at www.blackvaultradio.com. Again, that's www.blackvaultradio.com.
Welcome to Paranormal News on Ghostly Talk Radio. Paranormal News is produced by Genesis Creations Entertainment. I'm your host, Bonnie Vent. Do you need a celebrity to promote your product or service? Planning a big event and want that little extra star power? Want to have lunch or dinner with the cast of Leave It to Beaver or Dinner in a Concert with Peter Noon from Herman's Hermits? Then go to Genesis Creations Entertainment at www.genesiscreations.biz and book a celebrity today. Michael Jackson is set to rent a house near the Haunted Caves during his concerts in London this summer. The eccentric singer is reported to have paid £1 million to rent a large country house near the edge of an ancient 22-mile maze of haunted passageways. The undisclosed home is thought to be close to the Chislehurst Caves in Bromley in the southeast suburbs of London. Ghost sightings have been reported at the caves, which were dug in chalk by the Saxons, Druids, and Romans. The 50-year-old star sent aides to find the perfect country retreat before his first gig in London on July 8th. The three-story house, built in the 1800s, has quarters for 20 staff, as well as an underground cinema, music room, indoor swimming pool, lake, and private wood. Closed-circuit television cameras and state-of-the-art alarm systems will prevent fans from getting anywhere near the star during his series of 50 concerts. Unless, of course, they are ghostly fans. Shop manager Susan Gaylard was busy polishing a 19th century silver English teapot when she saw out of the corner of her eye a woman whisk past her front window. Looking up, Mrs. Gaylard realized this was no last-minute shopper trying to beat the clock. She had her hair up in a bun and a beautiful black old-fashioned dress with a big bustle. I knew she wasn't a real person. She was just too quick. It was Ms. Gaylard's first experience of the ghost of Brisbane Arcade. Since then, she, like other shopkeepers there, has had other peculiar moments. Glass doors on cabinets in her second-story boutique swing open for no apparent reason, and an all-pervasive sense of serene energy, not of this time. Over the years, security guards have lent their weight to this seductive myth with reported sightings of a female figure walking along the gallery level and footsteps heard after dark in the staff-only quarters. Some say the mysterious woman in black is a former shopkeeper who continues to keep a watchful eye on the arcade after her death. Others believe she is more likely to be Mary McIntosh, wife of the notorious Patrick Mayne, eternally walking the building as punishment for her family's sins. So haunted premises built on blood money or shrewd marketing ploy, whichever one it is, there's undoubtedly a rare something in the air of Brisbane Arcade. For more information on these stories, please go to www.sdparanormal.com and the Paranormal News feed page. Don't forget, sign up for a free subscription to Paranormal News. Thanks for joining us today on Paranormal News. If you'd like to sponsor or advertise on Paranormal News, please send us an email at parax.news@aol.com. You can listen to Paranormal News on Ghostly Talk Radio at www.ghostlytalk.com. Please check out their other fine shows. Or you can join us at paranormalnews.mypodcast.com. Until next time, I'm your host, Bonnie Vent.
I say, Sean B., I've been thinking about all the things necessary to produce a proper paranormal broadcast.
Do tell, Nathan S., what are these vital qualities?
Empathy, commitment, quiet dignity, and self-respect.
Indeed. What a shame we don't have any of those traits.
Oh, yeah, the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show is rocking its way on the supernatural scene.
It's drive-time paranormal broadcasting without the driving or the timing. Just go to www.ghostandthedemon.com.
Think you know what goes up in the night? You ain't heard nothing yet.
Each week, we'll be bringing you the best and the worst kept secrets in the paranormal community.
Yeah, us, the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter, Sunday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
www.ghostandthedemon.com. The Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show is beyond the normal broadcast.
When you flashed, I saw what looked like a figure standing in the hall.
Okay, this is Scream Team. We're ready for EVP sweep.
That is weird. These cameras don't do this.
Room. Water supposedly will come off and on in various rooms.
It's an EMF meter. Started this morning.
You're listening to the number one source for paranormal evidence brought to you firsthand by real investigators in the field. No hoaxes, no disinformation. You're listening to The Ghost Project.
I found myself face to face with someone or something that was attempting to play with my psyche as well as my physical being.
How sure are you of that?
I'm 100% sure of that.
This is Ghostly Talk.
Well, that was dramatic.
Wow.
I kind of dig it.
I feel like we're really just jumping into something. Just hop into the Batmobile and go off.
Actually, it kind of made me want to pick this chair up and break it over your back, but that's okay.
Thank you, Bonnie. I appreciate that.
And your self-restraint is appreciated.
I often want to do it to Doug, too, so don't feel like it's just you.
Yeah.
We're talking.
None of us are.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, camera. Yeah, just in the chair. Pile on, literally.
I love you, Scott.
Oh, wow. Two speechless hosts. There we go.
Yeah, thanks.
Everybody, we're talking about
the host and the co-host. The guest and the co-host want to beat us.
Right.
That my life is complete.
Yes.
I like you even more now.
This is the reason I got into this business for, is so I can have people beat me with chairs. Talking to Tamara Thorne. Tamara, thank you for joining us again. We always love having you here on the show.
I like you having me, too.
And we kind of got into this, like, weird hybrid conversation, I guess, before we went to break here, about, you know, hunting in Connecticut, and then kind of into the, you know, we kind of a continuation of what we talked about the last hour. You know, the reality TV thing, and just this whole idea, like, what's going on here, and how to take it, I guess.
So, because I've got the queen of creativity on the horn, you know, we're talking about, I wanted to know how this creative process works, and Tamara, you did a great job describing, you know, how it works, and I think that I can now grasp how it gets laid out into an enchanting and oftentimes titillating novel.
Yeah.
So now I'm wondering, it would be harder, I think, for them, because you have literally, you know, pretty much free reign when you're creating a novel to entertain and inform and really convey these interesting experiences and ideas that go on in your head and in your life. To you put it into the story and put it out, and people are like, wow, this is just... This is, you know, I can't put it down. Same with a movie.
I wish everybody was like you.
but with a movie, it's got to be 50 times harder, because you've got you know, contracts and time schedules and equipment problems and I mean,
and 50 other people rewriting you.
And then you've got the rewrites and you've got the people, and then all of a sudden they tell you, oh, but you've got to put, you know, super strength Drano cleaner in the movie somewhere, or, you know, I mean, for product placement. So you've got, like, all these things that you've got to accomplish in this case, what was it, 92 minutes or whatever, and sometimes more, sometimes less, you know, so it's got to be like 500 times maybe more difficult to get that. Plus, if you put is that five magic words at the beginning based on a true story?
Yeah.
You've also got the people who follow the story to try and placate. And then you've also got the people who are going to, whether they know the real story or not, who are going to say, oh, well, obviously that's what happened. Otherwise they wouldn't have put it in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not thinking for themselves or researching for themselves.
Yeah.
So you've got all this stuff all in this one big cauldron that you're stirring, and hopefully you get, you know, something that's going to entertain people at the end. And it's got to be really a difficult task. And I know that you're not, like, when you're doing it, you're not thinking about it. You're not like, oh, I've got, like, 87 million agendas to try and keep, you know, put into these 92 minutes.
That's true for me for fiction writing, for book writing. I don't know if it's true for everybody.
Right.
Especially people who have to put up with other people rewriting them. That's got to be hard. That's why I don't write for the screen. I wouldn't even dream of it. I don't play well with others.
I don't either.
I don't know. Yeah. I've heard the opposite about both of you two. So I don't know.
Definitely on Friday night.
Oh, Friday. Okay. But no, it's got to be an incredible, incredible challenge for folks to put out this kind of project. And I know that there's no way you can keep everybody happy. There's no way.
No. To me, in Hollywood, it would be find a really nice screenwriter, get them to do the story the way you like it, and hope they can sell it. You know, hope somebody will buy it. But I don't want to write it myself. All I want to do is take the money and smile and pay a bill.
And
when you get to this point, yeah, I guess that's the best way to go about it.
I think that's what you'd have to do. You would have to take your project and put it in a box and say, you know what, I'm going to give up some of this control. I have to. And okay. This is what I'm going to get at the end of it. And so take your bruises, but bruises will heal, and go with whatever they want.
Yeah.
If the price is right, or if the benefit is there.
It's easy for me because I write books and I have total control. But if I were to write a screenplay, I would be angry all the time because people would be telling me to change everything, and I don't like that.
Right, because then it loses its meaning. It'll lose a lot of why that was in there, you know, and it'll just take it away.
That works for people who are very organized and can really stay focused on where they're going. I write kind of in a global way. It's all in my head, and I just have to let it out. And thinking about it doesn't help.
Right.
If that makes any sense at all.
Oh, yeah, I've tried to write both ways.
Well, overthinking anything usually results in failure.
Well, that's what happens to me in my email.
We tried to overthink the show about 7-8 years ago, and it sucked. And then we just started saying, hey, let's just go with it. You know, we have a lot more fun with it, I think. You know, that's one example. And, thinking something to death will just kill you every time. So.
Right, and I think, Tamara, you're probably... in a better position, you know, as an author, that when people go to the bookstore and they see, oh, the new Tamara Thorne novel's out, ooh, I've got to get it, and they get it, they're not expecting, even if you say, you know, and you've said in interviews, well, you know, the place, it was a real place that inspired this, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. things like that. So even if you put that kind of, you know, onus on a story, people aren't expecting a historical account, right?
No,
they're expecting a marvelous story inspired by a place or an event or a person that you've met. Or, you know, they're inspired by whatever you say was the inspiration for that. Not a historical account of facts or of a haunting or of a supernatural manifestation, you know. But when you put that on a movie screen, or if you put that at the beginning of your TV show...
Perhaps they should change it to inspired by, rather than based on.
I wonder.
Inspired by probably is a better word.
I think so, too. I think that would help. Maybe that would help.
Because then
would that
people
help?
Would assume... That's exactly how it happened.
Because, Tamara, have you heard, have people come up to you and said, oh, that haunting in Connecticut, you know, how did that lady deal with it, you know? But no, it wasn't quite, I mean, there were some harrowing times, but I think, you know, Carmen didn't even come to terms with or accept that something was going on until rather late in the haunting.
Sure.
Because she denied. She was in denial. I think she said that to us several times. She was in denial about it for a long time, thinking her children were playing pranks on each other or trying to trick her or, you know, she was in denial even of the things that she would experience until all of a sudden.
Especially if it's your own house. Most people are in denial. It's the way to cope. And, by the way, I checked during the break with the producer, and the boy is alive and well.
Okay. That is good to know. Excellent.
Good.
Excellent.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing right there. I mean, in regards to the story, yeah, I know if I was to try to put myself in that situation, just here at the winery, for example, I mean, I live by myself, but, you know, if weird, crazy stuff started happening, the first thing I would do is be like, okay, who's coming over here and screwing with me? You know, somebody, and that's the reason I don't have any visitors here.
Then you would have to think who has keys.
Yeah, who has keys to this place?
It's Bonnie.
Who stacked all these chairs up on top of the table like this in a pyramid manner? You know, who would...
In the haunting in Connecticut, that chair scene, they have so many little tributes to other horror movies. And that one... I think that was about the scariest looking pile of chairs I ever saw. It was so opposite of the poltergeist scene.
I was just going to say that's poltergeist all day long.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I have to say, in regard, you know, we're talking about movies. This is fun. In regards to Poltergeist, you just said that's the scariest chair scene. And that is absolutely ridiculous, because there is that scene in Poltergeist where, what's her name, the lady, I was forget her, the actress's name. But, you know, she turns around. The chairs are just sitting there at the table, like, you know, sit down and wait to eat. It's all good, right? And then she turns.
And then they're up.
Yeah, the camera cuts over, and then she's doing something else, and she comes back. And the damn chairs are sitting, like...
But it's happy. It's a sunny, bright, white and yellow kitchen, and they're laughing over it, and it looks friendly. And I've had something like that. I experienced something like that once with a person who's a Poltergeist agent. And we turned around, and all of a sudden, all the cushions in her den were piled in the middle of the room, like they were thrown from every direction. And
did you hear anything?
Did
she hear this? Like, you know, if you're going to hear cushions, I mean, they're going to make a sound. Boom, boom,
we
boom.
Didn't hear anything.
See, that's
we
what...
That would creep me out more than the physical movement. Was
the stuff that what happened before that was way creepier. So it was... And besides, I knew full well the, you know...
Joe Beth Williams, by the way. That was Thank you, Shelley. Appreciate that. So yeah, I think that's the weirdest part about a phenomena of that sort, even whether it's a movie or if it's real, is you don't hear anything
and you don't know what's happening. Like, because you think you have, as you know, I think I know what's going on around.
Well, here's a chair I'm sitting in right now.
Right, and if you
all heard that,
we
all heard that, man. That sucks.
But it gets freaky. But you think you know what's going on around you. You think you're pretty much in control. I mean, I know you can only see what 180 degrees or less, you know. But you can hear pretty much 360, and so you rely on your senses to keep you in tune with what's happening around you. I mean,
especially your sense of hearing.
It's a defense mechanism. It's sometimes, you know, good for overhearing things, and then, you know, blackmail purposes. So it's a really valuable sense. And but you try and, you know, you know what's going on around you, and then if you turn around and see something that you didn't otherwise sense happening, that's the startle.
Well,
that's
like
the
loss of control over your environment,
and you forget about it. You decide it's nothing. I have something. I'm at my business right now, and there's stuff that happens up the hall occasionally. And on those days, my cat can't stay here. I have to take him home because he freaks. But there are cold spots or noises in particular and all that. And I can be here at 1 in the morning, and I hear him, and I'm just convinced it's something electrical because we're near a city street. And, you know, but I just don't even question it. Unless I'm not here, then I start thinking, ooh.
I wonder what that was. Yeah.
Point being, this is a very real thing, though, too. Yeah, it's been portrayed in films a couple times, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very real thing, too. I mean, you can read about this. Tamara, you've had experience with this.
Yeah.
I haven't. Have we had any type of experience with this, though? We've had a radio turn on. You weren't there for that, though.
I wasn't there.
I've had a radio turn on for no reason. Something like that could be explained away, though. Well, the radio. We did whatever we could with that. But to actually have, like we are talking about here, actual, like, furniture or cushions or whatever.
No, the closest I've had, I think, is the popping of light bulbs. And thank heavens you took care of that in this room by putting in the floor.
We have the spiral ones now.
Because, my grandma can't do those yet, so we're lucky. But she does. She gets all. If it's an incandescent light and it's around me, its days are numbered. My grandma will get it.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. She's good at it.
You're probably really good at starting up the hauntings then.
She, as a matter of fact, she's got. I've had to. Do you know what you do if a light bulb goes out in your hotel room? You just take it out the socket, you take it to the front desk, and you say, I need a new light bulb. And they go in the back and they trade you.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask you what room number you were in, because evidently they keep a log. Some of them.
It's not if you're at the Best Western in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, though. Just so people know, if anything breaks in there,
you're on your own.
Well, no, you have to usually get a goat and sacrifice that. Wait till midnight and sacrifice the goat, and then if they're feeling good enough, they might bring you the batteries to your remote or whatever it may be.
Oh, wow.
While they're in between parties in the other rooms getting high and drunk with the other patrons.
Wow. I'm glad I didn't go there.
I didn't mean to go off on a tangent about that.
No.
I just stick that into the conversation. Hate the Best Western in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I hope the place falls into the earth.
Wow.
And, you know.
Well, I'm glad I've never been there so that my grandma hasn't broken any of their light bulbs to disturb their party and day.
What a thing.
But, you know, and...
Doug, I think you were mid-hotel story.
I'm not getting off the ground. I am not getting off the ground at all
Was
tonight.
There a point to your hotel story?
I mean, some phenomena I guess I'm just numb to, not even numb to, I just take in stride, mm-hmm. and I just blame it all on my grandma. I imagine probably a certain percentage of those bulbs just break in my presence, but it's such a large number that I think, you know, some of them are going to be my grandmother. So I just blame them all on her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a phenomenon.
That's a surefire method.
That's the closest phenomena that I've had happen that was, like, uncontrollable or whatever. But fortunately for me, it's a somewhat startling phenomena in that, you know, it's light and suddenly it's dark. It's either dark or just darker if it's only one of several light bulbs. But, you know, so it's like, oh, a light bulb popped. You know, grandma must be here. You know, and that's pretty much what it is. It's not startling anymore or whatever. But if I were sitting here and I'm chatting with you guys, blah, 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 and then I turn around and all the books or all the CDs are taken out of the shelves and are stacked, you know, vertically on the shelf,
You would not freak nearly as much as Scott would.
I know,
unless
like,
they were stacked alphabetically, it'd be on.
I'd be like, now this is one happening ghost right here.
One thing, like the chairs. I was just thinking about the Haunting in Connecticut story with the chairs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, those chairs were piled up, I guess, by the ghost boy, Jonah. And they were trying to lead, you know, the cancer boy to the bodies.
Right,
that's
right.
Where they were stacked.
Right.
So what do you think the poltergeist chairs meant? Was it trying to make them feel safe or... You know,
no, that was... wasn't that early in the poltergeist movie?
Yeah.
I think that was...
I was making out Amber by then, so you guys just go on.
I think it was a warning in poltergeist as opposed to a leading, you know, like a... You know, a different
a clue.
Mm. I think it was more of a warning or an annoyance kind of thing in Poltergeist.
Yeah,
and Poltergeist are often very annoyingly cute.
Mm-hmm.
Just short of being really obnoxious. Although I would count that as obnoxious because I don't like to clean things.
Yeah, I would not want to take them all and put them back. No. And Scott would not want to have to re-alphabetize all of these CDs that we have. So,
well, I'd be calling the first exorcist I could. But look, man, all right, is anybody possessed there? No, sir. But he knocked all of my CDs and DVDs out of order. And we got a major problem we need to take care of. Get the cast from Paranormal State here immediately to handle this. I need Ryan Beal here. I need him to find out why Belial is in here reorganizing all of my CDs and DVDs.
Oh,
is it that time yet?
Oh, that sounds like karma. I cannot watch that show.
Ryan, I need your help, brother. Please get over here and give me a hand. I need help. Sorry. That's a really cool film, yeah.
How did we get this?
I'm trying to get off the ground here. I really
know.
Am.
I don't know. But
I watched Amityville Horror last night. The good one, not the new one.
Oh, good.
That's sort of along the same lines.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe part of the story that makes a ghost story real is something Stephen King pointed out years and years ago when the movie first came out, and it's that people are stuck in these houses because they don't have the money to move.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that the reason for staying in the house is all important to a story for people to believe. You know, I can't go buy another house. Thank God I've got one already.
Mm-hmm.
But if it suddenly started dripping blood out of the walls, I'd probably think there were cannibal squirrels in them, but that's beside the point.
I'd be finding a way to remortgage something else. I would work it out.
In this economy, though, you're probably either stuck with your house or you just give it back to the bank and say, you know what, I'm not paying on it anymore, so ruin my credit because, it's on it, and sorry. And what else are you going to do?
Personally, I sleep at my business and keep my house because it's almost paid for.
Oh, well, in that case, yes.
But there are these constraints, though, that people are under. Yeah, okay, look, we got a haunting here. Yeah, that Amityville, that was the issue. I mean, we've heard George, let's talk about that and stuff, and saying, look, we put everything we had into this place. You know, what do you want us to do? We had to try to stick it out until it got to a certain point, according to George, that, you know, look, we just can't do, we got to get out of here. We have to leave. This is just too ridiculous. So, you know, it is another kind of cool example of how, you know, the other world and the real world can intersect and affect each other directly, and that is right there. I mean, yeah, the mortgage and the ghost, they don't see eye to eye always, right?
Right.
We're trying to deal with this. So, you know, that's...
What stories would you like to hear, or what stories would be interesting to make into books or movies? I mean, because we've all heard, you know, the story of the Phantom Hitchhiker, and that's been made into 80 million books and movies. And we've heard the story of, you know, now that they've put Haunting in Connecticut, you know, off of the History Channel or whatever and onto the big screen, it's like, whoa, that was, you know, that was great. But what would be next? What would be another classic? Does anybody have any ideas?
Not the Myrtles. I'm so sick of that story.
Everybody does the Myrtles, yes.
No, I knew this yesterday.
Did they ever do anything like the Enfield Poltergeist story?
The Enfield Poltergeist?
Enfield.
I
don't think they've ever really done anything with that. They did something with the Entity already, which it was that was insane. The Entity, you know, the story.
That was quite a movie.
Yeah, that was, well, quite a book, too, on top of that. The book is 10 times as scary as the movie
was.
Wow. That's actually an interesting question to ask, you know, other people too, and find out what would be another. Because, you know, granted, you know, I'll be blunt here, and I think I've hinted to that I didn't fall in love with Haunting in Connecticut. Okay, it wasn't the greatest thing, but it's still fun to go see these stories. Amber loved it, you know.
I liked it too. I was with Amber. I think that it was very, very well done. I thought it was entertaining. You know, I mean, but then again, I knew most of the actual story, you know, and I heard it, you know, I heard Carmen tell us about it. So
yeah.
I was intrigued, and I wanted to see the movie, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's hard to make a haunted house, either a book or a movie. It's really hard to get around it.
It's got to be.
And so it was very successful because it told a ghost story that was rational and scary and not full of, you know, torture devices.
Cavalry is coming.
That type's really, really hard.
Yeah, we yelled at Bonnie about the keyboard thing. Now that I'm taking a little bit more of an active role in the chat room, I got to get a pad for my keyboard now also,
yeah.
I think. Camera, unfortunately, we just flew through this thing. We're like totally...
Yeah. Oh, God.
That has been an hour.
Yeah, I know.
It seems like just a few minutes catching up.
Holy cow, man.
Well, yeah. Tamara, we could talk with her. Tamara, we talked on the phone, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago or something like that? And it was one of those things, like, I got to go. You're like, I got to go. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. And then we'd like do another 15, 20 minutes.
That's how it happens, you know? So easy to talk to and so incredibly knowledgeable
full of something.
No, I'm absolutely serious. Everybody. I want everybody to go to www.tamarathorne.com, TamaraThorne.com. If it's not already in your bookmarks, put it there so you can keep up with all the latest and greatest from Tamara.
It's only 4 years out of date, but I promised to update. You can find me on MySpace and Facebook and all the
Absolutely.
Scott, check your email. I sent you, for Doug, a new little piece of writing I just did the other day.
Looking at it right now.
There it is.
Yeah, looking at
it right
now.
Forward that over to my...
I'll forward that over to you for sure. Tamara, hang on the line for one thing. We do have to get the break here. Hang on for one thing. And thanks again for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Coming up next, Mark Kimmel. We haven't talked with him in a while. I cannot wait to find out what's going on with Mark Kimmel.